like-minded or, yeah. or yes people, right?
Mm, yes, man. Yeah.
You know, you're an avid reader, right? Like you've read a lot of books throughout your life.
A lot of history and biography.
And so I believe, and folks can challenge me, whatever the fuck they want to say, there's no such thing as like when you talk about fiction and nonfiction, even fiction, it's there for a reason. It's sharing a story. It's just covered up and coded differently, right? Yeah. Like we're talking about history and Yes Man and repeating itself. And I think of the book, Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, totally. I've got, yeah.
Right? It's written in what, 1950 or 60? I gave my
kids a copy of that.
A 1,000-page book that it's exact same shit that we're dealing with today that was predicted about the railroad and how things were run. Yes Man, what was it? A bunch of egotistical folks sitting around the table going, yeah, shut the fuck. Listen to what he's got to say. You might learn something.
But that's our government.
What's the famous Rand quote there, too, when you see that you have to ask permission to produce from people that do not produce, then you know your society is doomed. So, you know, to get a building permit and the construction costs, for example. Like, these people don't produce. They don't care if you build or not because they're getting paid not to produce no matter what. The bureaucrats, right? And they'll tie you up, but our society is doomed because people that don't produce anything are...
There's a question for you, John. Do you think the construction industry here in Canada is responsible enough that we do not require our building codes, that we can build better than what they're asking us?
We could certainly build better, but we do need minimal code, obviously, for people that are unethical.
Yes.
You know that.
But if we were left to our own devices... And we had good tradespeople, and we had good people that wanted to build, and build for the, like you said on the previous show.
You mean like they did for millennia in Europe, and cathedrals still stand?
Yes.
Michelangelo wasn't an engineer.
The tourist industry builds off of.
Yeah, the Duomo is not engineered; it was done by an artisan.
I love that structure, by the way.
Yeah, the world's largest dome. Incredible. Yeah, no building permit. Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm going at. If you actually left us to our own devices, I think we would actually...
It would be better.
We would cherish...
Get government out of the way.
Yes.
Get government. Like, look at the roads now. So I have some road builder clients, and they're putting molasses on the road now. Why? So that they need to be... I say molasses. It's such a... The tar is not what it used to be.
It's soft because
they have to keep the guys going, so we're going to keep repairing and repairing and
black
repairing.
Black gold.
Yeah, we're not going to actually make it durable, like a Roman road that lasts thousands of years. No, we're going. We just have to keep it.
It's getting softer. And that's based on internal combustible engine cars.
Oh my God!
Now we're dealing with EV cars that are twice as heavy as our cars.
Unbelievable.
So what's that going to do to the road infrastructure?
Unbelievable.
We already know the guardrails can't handle those cars.
No.
I was just sickening. I think that if you had a string of everybody actually cared about this industry, we all policed each other. And you did not have the government telling us how we should build and use these new products that have not been tested. They've not been tested.
I know.
Yeah. They've just been theorized.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And now you're putting them, and we have some extreme climates here.
Oh.
We get the coldest of colds. We get the hottest of hots.
Totally. Yeah.
And we have structures that need to breathe between these two climates.
And move.
So when they're asking us to build certain ways and it fails, what's going to happen to these structures? I agree with you 100%. We are not building today any century homes.
No, they won't be around.
They will demolish them.
We're not building century cars either.
Build, no.
Nobody's going to 50 years from now say, oh, look at that Prius.
Okay.
That's not happening.
Cars.
I couldn't restore that.
I mean, cars is a perfect example. And I don't want to go on too long.
Bland homogeneity.
But I had the privilege this past summer. I visited Calgary with my wife, and we went to Gasoline Alley. There's a heritage car museum there. I was fascinated. Wow, I spent hours. She got bored, but I spent hours
style,
there.
Style, right?
What were you fascinated by?
Just the
which
the,
vehicle?
Oh,
there's always a vehicle that stands out.
Yeah, but maybe he can't remember the name.
I can't remember the name.
What did it look like?
I know what it looked like. It looked like Cruella de Vil vehicle front. It was a sedan.
Oh, okay.
A two door sedan. It was a V12 engine. It was a 1930
probably
era.
A Packard or something like that, or a McLaughlin Buick or something.
It wasn't a Buick. It could have been a Packard. It was long.
Long nose.
Yeah. It was like a sport coupe. I was like, I love this vehicle. Yeah. There wasn't many of them. No. But to the point was, there was a variety of different details and ideologies and craftsmanship into each
by hand. Detail.
By hand.
By hand.
Whether it was a fire truck, a fuel truck. And we learned, because they were telling us, oh, we no longer used kerosene lamps because the gasoline truck would blow up because of the kerosene. Right? Yep. And now you tie this into today's building where there's nothing that's going to sustain that, whether it be a building or a car. It's consumable items. Crush it, rebuild it.
I was recently in Turkey, and I was at the museum for the tomb for the original president, and they had encased his first...
Ataturk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's two cars. One was a Cadillac, one was a Lincoln. Yeah. Beautiful. Beautifully restored. Like, beautiful.
Kemal
Ataturk, I was just, yes. Like, just in awe.
I still call it Constantinople. I can't bother with Istanbul. Yeah. But anyway... Constantinople forever.
I loved it. It was an amazing place. I was very respectful for a lot of the places I went to look at.
Well, it is a crossroads physically, geographically, but also in cultures. But it's amazing to have, you know, Christians and Muslims living side by side, because it is where two continents meet. The Occident and the Orient meets right there. And it's fascinating culture. The Hagia Sophia, I've never seen it, but I've studied it, and I would love to physically see it someday. But either way, it's beautiful architecture.
May I ask another question? We're talking about preserving history.
And I am at your service.
You said at one point in time, and I'm paraphrasing, so please fill in the gaps, we must preserve arts and crafts.
We must preserve the glories of the vanished age for the next generation to enjoy. And just my father's quote. The glories of a vanished age.
We're not doing it.
For the next generation to enjoy. In the same way, as I said, that you can go to Turkey today, you can go to the Colosseum, you can go to the Acropolis, because somebody else preserved it.
Yes.
Beyond their life. What's that old, I forget who said it, but you know, you must plant trees under whose shade you will never sit.
Yeah.
Oh, and
I'm trying to remember who said it.
Think of the legacy beyond your life. You know,
yeah, you posted that on...
For those years that you will not see. Like,
how many trees have you planted, Jonathan?
I've cut down a lot.
I've cut down more than I've planted. I'm going to say in the past... even in the past 5 years, I've probably planted about 12 in the past 5 years.
That's pretty good.
Cut down.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Well,
no, I was. It's true. I mean, we planted a couple of apple trees, a couple of pine trees, a couple of. We lost an apple tree.
Good for you.
So,
what is your favorite species of wood?
Honduran mahogany. Honduran mahogany has a majesty unlike anything. Yeah, this is teak, and it's lovely and it's durable, but it doesn't have the majesty of Honduran mahogany. So, it's the chief among furniture woods. I mean, the apex of furniture design was really the 18th century. You know, Chippendale in the 1750s, although that was the apex and craftsmanship. It's beautiful. There's a book I have in here that I'll just go get.
Go grab it.
That you might enjoy that. And sorry
about that. No, it's fine.
So this is a reprint that I had studied in my youth to learn things. And the more you read, you know, you discover. The more you read, you discover you don't know anything.
It's got a lot of
dated designs, but the principles don't change. But there's a whole treatise here.
Were those desks?
Yes.
Those were desks.
Furniture, there's desks, everything. It talks about joinery. So this was published, I believe, in 1837.
And, what's the name of it?
The Victorian Cabinet Maker's Assistant. And everybody should have a copy of this. And, for example, it talks about the origins of mahogany. But look at that right there. It talks about bird's eye maple and the way the grain grows. I don't know if you can see that.
That's it.
But how it grows up like that. And when you slice the wood, you get those little eyes.
We've seen them in bird's eye maple all the time.
It goes into detail on everything about that. And it talks about the origins of mahogany, which at that time in England, in the early 1700s, the chief wood was walnut. Somebody brought mahogany back as ballast from Honduras. and it sat in a yard forever. It was deemed to be too difficult to work with. And finally, some doctor, it's listed in there, said, look, I've got all this wood, make me something out of it. When they got to work with it and they revealed the beauty of Honduran mahogany, it just instantly became the fashionable wood to have. It is
this
the
is
most
how far back?
Difficult. Early 1700s.
Okay.
Yeah, because it came from our East Indian and West Indies trade and whatnot. West Indies and Honduras, at any rate, that's South America. But that was, it speaks about all those things. That should be required reading in every workshop. And it speaks about the origins of wood, their characteristics, what they're good for. And it also talks a lot about joinery and how to make things. We look at furniture today, and you have to reverse engineer everything, right?
Yes, you do.
And so much of what I have to restore, for example, is reverse engineering, saying, how did they put that together? And you go back, and my father made it very simple for me, too. He said, hey, just reduce it to its barest elements and go from there. Because everything looks complex when it's built, but you know full well as you're tearing something apart. Yep.
You discover.
It went up by layers, or whatever it is. It went together in layers. But it's a great book. I should. I'll try and get you a copy.
No, I'll find a copy for sure.
But at any rate, into it's...
And actually, Bird's Eye Maple is actually a favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. But the joinery details, the perspective, how to create ellipses. I still use, when I have to make an elliptical table or an archway, I still use those principles.
Why do you like those curves so much, John?
Is it
an emotional connection?
It is. It's sentimental.
It is, very much. When I see an arch in woodworking, there's something about it that does not appear when you see a 90 degree.
No. That's classic joinery details, in perspective. At any rate, I like curves. I like to... I hate being the last in the line of shipbuilders going back 900 years, and it dies with me. So that's hard. Now, there's another classic example of how wood cups and warps. You see that?
Yeah.
It gives the cross-section of the tree, and when you flat-cut wood, that's how it's going to warp based on the slide. People need to know this academic stuff. To me, it's just inherent. But I'm always shocked that modern carpenters don't understand that. The choice of lumber, be it quarter-sawn, where it doesn't expand...
Will affect... It will
or
affect,
flat sawn, yes. If there's a curve, if the wood's frowning. You see it in deck boards where the frown side's up and the heartwood peels up.
And you'll cup. I know. You see it all the time.
So I always tell the boys, put the heartwood down.
This goes back to teacher versus education.
Exactly.
Because
give them a practical
You're learning this, but you're teaching this. You're self-taught this. You've read this. You've learned this.
Well, and I wasn't self-taught. I was given the tools to read.
But the material today, though, John.
Oh, it's disgraceful. You can't build anything good.
We can't even spend the time to age the material properly.
No, and that's a big problem. Big problem. It affects my work. I had restored a porch in the beaches, and we made tongue and groove, tongue wide, and one of the boards is rotted completely. Rotted completely in 3 or 4 years.
How did that happen?
Just because it was crap wood to start with. It didn't look bad when I ran it
through
the machines.
There wasn't a split or there wasn't...
No, it was some internal rot somewhere that I didn't see in the wood, and it's gone. And every one of those boards is pretty much heartwood, but I can't help it because that's all I can get.
Do we not have the right...
Like I can't cut down 200-year-old trees and dry them. I have to get whatever Oliver Lumber has, that kind of thing.
But then you're getting, and I think I
so
saw
I have
this
to fix one.
Over the pandemic years, I saw how they quickly were getting material moved to the customer. And even I was objecting. I constantly objected. I said, I'm not happy with this. I'm not happy with this.
There's 2x4s for structure today filled with wormholes. Are you kidding me?
It goes back to the theory of we're not building century homes.
No, they're just commodities for a 30-year mortgage, and that's it. I don't understand it.
With the way everything is being set up, didn't she recently change it to a 35-year?
Oh, probably. But
I
what
don't
difference
know. It doesn't matter at that point, right? Bottom line is that in your lifespan, you will not pay. But the material is being challenged. So then we go back to economics. So why bother being passionate? Why bother put your soul into it?
I question
it all the time because I love construction.
We live in domiciles now, most people, not in homes.
Meet Jonathan Sinelli, the visionary behind People First Leadership. Jonathan is not your average leadership coach. His People First Leadership approach focuses on putting people at the core of your strategy, creating workplaces where teams thrive and achieve outstanding results. What sets him apart? Jonathan is a master at asking thought-provoking questions that spark genuine conversations and challenge conventional thinking. His deep empathy helps him understand unique challenges and guide people toward impactful solutions. As an accomplished author, media host of the People First podcast, and seasoned project management expert with a background as an electrician, Jonathan offers unparalleled experience and practical insights. Whether you're interested in a one-on-one coaching or breakout room sessions, Jonathan customizes his approach to your needs. He also travels the world, speaking at conferences and business events, inspiring leaders with his dynamic presentations. Discover how People First Leadership can transform your approach and ignite your team's potential with Jonathan Sinelli. Call Jonathan at 416-717-4139 or email him at jc@jonathansinelli.com or reach out to him on his website at jonathansinelli.com. This message is proudly supported by the Construction Life Podcast.
Right, just
what should you feel, John, when you enter a home?
You should know the personality of the client right off the bat. Starting with the entrance door.
The entrance door.
Starting with that.
So that door.
And I don't care if it's a condominium. So it's a uniform in the hallway. But as soon as you open the door, you should see something of the personality.
Who that person is that lives there.
Not just yet another white interior with a flat screen. And my other pain in the ass that I hate modern designs, these condominiums, you walk into the kitchen. A lot of open concept. You walk into the kitchen. I don't want to look at a dishwasher and a refrigerator. I struggled with a job
That's
in Ottawa.
That's why they penalized it nowadays.
Struggle with a job in Ottawa, a high-end luxury condominium. And the kitchen is right there in the living room. There's a kitchen and an island and then the living room. It's like, no matter what I do in that living room, I'm looking at a stainless steel fridge. Mm. So what I suggest, of course, is to do a built-in fridge, and we'll panel it and make it disappear and make it not look like... But it still looks like a kitchen because you've got an oven
there. You know that that's the fridge.
Yeah, and you've got an oven. You can't hide that. Yes. But this is the problem with today. How do you put personality in a place when they're designed to have the kitchen in your living room? Like, it's...
So what do you suggest? How do you put personality into it?
People today don't want rooms.
I disguise the kitchen as much as possible. By doing something like a built-in refrigerator, like with panel doors to match.
Is that not different than what most people think, where they think the kitchen should be the focal point?
A lot of people do, and I don't know where that comes from.
Brandon, I would say Tommy. I tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I want my neighbors to know I have a Sub-Zero, I have Amelia, I have a certain particular brand.
I think you're right. Yeah.
If I put a panel on there, they won't know unless they open.
And I want to hide the thing. I like the English.
I agree with you.
You hide the kitchen. That's where the servants cook. I don't want to see the damn thing. But that's just me. I don't.
There's too many.
But this is $1 million condominium, right? The island is there. Not a dining room. It's a sit-at island. Like, you dine at the island.
Right.
And then there's a living room. It's about
how many square feet
14 by 24 room with a kitchen, island, and living room, all in one. Two full bedrooms, two full bathrooms.
So while you're sitting in the living area,
it's a big
area,
place.
your eye line, your sight line is just pure kitchen.
Yeah. It's one big room.
It doesn't feel like home.
No, it doesn't. And you've got a couple of bar stools there at the... At the island, because it's just an overhang on the island that you sit at. So there's no dining room and an eat-in kitchen. It's just all one. But I would say 60% of the space was devoted to two bathrooms, two full big bedrooms, big closet, and a den. And then this 13.6, I think it was, by 24 kitchen. But that only leaves you about a 10.5 foot, because I was trying to measure an area rug, a Persian rug for that room, and I had about 10'4" to the end of the island by 13.6. That was the living room, and the rest was an old kitchen. Big kitchen with a big range hood. It's stainless and white.
Is it designed on that, like that way, for the purpose of entertaining? So when you do have guests over?
Probably. But why not have a living room that's
So you could sit down and actually converse.
And it's very difficult. Things. So we ended up having to make furniture. We made a sofa, made built-in banquettes and things, because there's nothing you could buy, because everything's so overstuffed and oversized today. Royal York, as we discussed earlier, being that, you know, massive chairs. I mean, what are people, you know, 7 feet tall and 400 pounds? Like, what is this? Chairs so deep that you're sitting like this. Because the, who sits on these things? Are they giants?
The I think they were they giants. Made great
what, Instagram, social media.
Why are they 26 inches deep? Like, you're forced to slouch back. It's outrageous. So my point is, nothing would fit in that place. And you know how many Toronto condominiums do you see where they've got the 30-inch column in the middle of the room?
Oh, yeah.
99 times out of 100, I will do a curved banquette built right in there, because you can't put a sofa in that corner. You're losing 30-inch by 30-inch because there's a structural support column in a dead corner. And then I wrap them in curved bookcases or something like that. And a curved banquette that comes around, and it makes a beautiful piece. And it's inexpensive. It's cheaper than buying pre-made furniture. And it fits, and it's beautiful. That's it's proportioned.
Smart. I like that.
The critical thing to any design that I always start with clients is proportion, proportion, proportion to the room, proportion. You got to have it proportionate. Don't buy overstuffed furniture. Don't buy everything that's not going to fit. It's just hell, right?
Should your front
but
door
go into the brick these days or some of these big box stores? Oh. Everything's huge. Why are the armrests 12 inches wide and they seat
sectional
two
spaces?
Nobody lives in that anymore. Have you seen Toronto that condominiums? Like,
nobody can fit that.
No.
Should you always make your front door out of wood?
No, it depends on the. I prefer bronze, quite frankly. Like, sure, seriously, just clad in bronze or something. I like metal doors. Depends on the home. But if you've got a stately home, it's nice to have a wood door.
A wood door.
Dark stain or yes. Whatever you want. But
yes.
You put a good boat-building marine varnish on it, it'll last a long time. I mean, this gets pounded on in rain and sun constantly, but a vertical surface, not so much. Right? So it'll last a long time.
Should we stay true to characters in that door? Should we have a mail slot? Should we have a proper door?
I've never liked mail slots because they're not insulated in this country. They're too cold.
It's too cold. It lets a lot of
way
air
too
in.
Cold.
Yeah.
No, I honestly, I. Do you want this down?
No, that's fine.
I can wrap it up, whatever. Hold it. I like to have a door without a mail slot, if possible, because it's too cold.
There's just something, as much as it's convenient, and I'm talking about Ring, that I dislike so much about it, versus a knocker, versus just knocking. Or an actual...
You want an actual knocker. Yes, it's classic.
I just don't...
I love that.
But you walk around every neighborhood, and I think everybody has a Ring, or everybody has a comparable
version. Oh, those new bloody camera
yes,
things.
Yes, the camera things, right?
Can't stand it.
And I there's a place for security in your home, and you can have cameras, but I just have an issue with the Ring, because it's just created a soulless point of entry.
Totally.
To contact somebody at the home.
Yeah, no. A distinct knock is nice.
Yes.
Exactly.
And a knock on a wood or knock on a metal, I think, works really well.
Well, there's also a majesty, and I don't mean ostentation. There's just a majesty of a door knocker, whether it's a simple ring shape or a great lion's head, whatever. But there's just a nice elegance, a quiet elegance to have a door knocker.
How and do it, you tackle the idea
if
of
you
the
go to Hamptons, or pardon me, Hamptons, New York, and any of the old New England places... Knockers everywhere.
Yeah,
but just like England.
And there's usually history behind that knocker.
Totally, and they won't change them.
No, it's a diner. I'm sitting here thinking, I love knockers. I remember as a kid, like, bang, tum, bang, tum, bang. Tum. Our children, 10 and 8, I don't know that they would ever even encounter a knocker in a traditional subdivision. No. You'll never see it.
I don't see them at all. I only see rings.
Yeah.
I just, the other thing that bothers me about, I guess, predetermined subdivision homes is the garage at the front.
Oh, yes, I agree.
One third of the face of the house is taken up by...
Because lots are 12 feet wide.
Yeah, that's I mean, I missed the days. I actually grew up in the College and Dufferin areas, and the garages were in the back.
yeah,
the laneways.
As it should be, I think.
Yeah. Right? Because you only had a home that was 15 feet wide.
Well, that comes down to government planning again.
Yeah.
There's an oxymoron, but, just cram them in there. It's like military intelligence, yeah. Anyway, just cram them in there and put the garage up front.
But the garages in the back made so much sense, but now we're being pushed to hurry it up to do all as many laneway homes as possible.
Yeah.
And I have yet, and I would love to see it, more of a historical heritage laneway home built, because they always go towards a minimalistic view. Mm,
shipping container style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But wouldn't it be nice to have a coach house in the back?
Oh, yes.
We used to have coaches. With a proper door in the backyard, that possibly have a door in the backyard and a door off the laneway.
Up till the 1910, really, we had to have coach houses in the back because that's where you kept your horses because you needed it. It was a necessity. And we got the automobile, and just like we used to have kitchen gardens, everybody had, growing up, everybody had the backyard filled with grape arbors and fruits. Yep. And today, people are complaining they're starving to death and they don't have a garden, but they've got a beautiful lawn.
Manicure.
We're starving to death. There's geese everywhere. Shoot them and eat them. Like, that's what people used to do.
Shoot them. Holy shit, John.
Bow and arrow. But I'm just saying.
I love what you're saying.
People used to do that.
Bow and arrow.
It's only post-war, Second World War. Everything went to hell, and it's going to be mass-produced, and you're going to eat this cellophane wrap stuff. People have lost the skill of survival, and that's bad. And yet food is abundant. Food is everywhere. There's so many geese, they have a problem with geese.
And you can't sit here and tell somebody, I shot this, because they're going, you can't shoot that. What do you want to do?
Well, in this area, like there's lots of hunters here, and they still shoot and things in the season, and it's just what you do. But Toronto has a lot of geese.
A shitload. Literally.
Shoot them, butcher, butcher them, and, give them to food banks, cook them. I mean, a Christmas goose is right in Charles Dickens. I mean, come on, it's just...
Is it not against the law in Canada?
What, freedom?
Yeah, that too. Yeah. No, killing a geese.
No, it's not against the law. You have to hunt in season.
Okay, all right.
Should be some culling, in the middle of summer when there's 5,000 geese wandering about.
They crossed the street over here. We're like, okay.
Tons of them.
Holy shit.
And you have to wade through their excrement.
I made a joke of just they're walking across the street as if they're using a device.
Oh, look, they made a paved road for us. Exactly. Oh boy, no! It's wild here. It's just
John. I'd love for you to walk us through if you were to build a home today, your home, your final home. What would that home look like?
It would be a Regency home. Hmm. Regency, the style. It's a very restrained. When George III was in his madness, and when his
it's fine.
Before George IV came to the throne, but he had a very restrained, classic, what Banks used to look like. A lot of Greco-Roman pilasters, very clean. Basically, like the front of the Royal York, for example. Mm-hmm. It's just limestone, very simple, clean lines, elegant. A water table board, pediment, and pilasters. Not a proud column, but a Regency home is magnificent. Restrained elegance. Classic Greco-Roman architecture.
See, that's a home.
Mm.
Chatsworth is made like that, all the great estates. Blenheim Palace is a little bit more ornate, but that kind of architecture.
How do you incorporate the modern, the updated, the kitchens, the appliances?
Well, first of all, technology. I would just keep those out of public sight.
Okay, so separate it.
Just separate it.
That's it.
Don't make it a lifestyle. If you want to have... And I know a lot of Europeans, Italians, Portuguese, things like that, they like to have the separate second kitchen where you all get together.
Yes.
Well, you can do that. But if you have a very formal home, have a dining room separate. Have a kitchen separate. But have a breakfast nook in the kitchen where if you're just having, dinner with the kids or whatever, or your wife, you have a little place you can go.
Nobody spends the effort on a dining room these days.
No, but they should be. I'll tell you when they did start re-spending the effort... was during COVID. Every stupid open concept place ever built, people were losing their minds and saying, I want walls.
They couldn't function.
Yeah, I was chopping up more places. I want a wall here, and I'm tired of this open concept because we need solitude. Without solitude, without some place to go and recharge, you'll just be a swan in a duck pond, you know, babbling all around you. You do need peace. You need walls. You need rooms. And I love in the English style of architecture where every room is a different feeling.
Yes.
There's the red room, and you go over here, and there's the black room.
There's no need for every room to connect to each other.
Exactly.
It doesn't need to have the same floor right throughout the entire system.
No.
Each room should have its own character.
No. Every home my father built, and I continue the practice as often as possible, there's a marble threshold separating the rooms.
From one to the next.
And that's a different feel. This is a walnut-paneled library, and over here is, you know, the yellow reading room or whatever you would have. And you can do that in a condominium. You can do it anywhere. You can make things look nice and distinct.
What should the bedrooms look like?
Cozy. They should be dark and cozy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to sleep there.
Yes.
You want to go in and have, it's in darkness that dreams are made, you know. You want to have a peaceful place. Not a bright, sunny room that, like, what the hell's the point of that? You want to close your eyes.
Light on top of light on top of light.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's just nuts. So I like...
a series of 20 recess lights, sconces. Mm-hmm.
You need task lighting to clean.
Yes.
But at nighttime, I want rich fabric. One of my favorite treatments is to do a whole... instead of a great headboard and a plaster wall, just line the wall with velvet curtains or something. Just floor to ceiling. Soft. It absorbs noise. And it's a softness. It's more of a boudoir than a bedroom.
Which should the ensuite be? How should we design the ensuite?
Oh, bathrooms and kitchens to me should always be, and I live like that personally, I like them as minimal and easy clean as possible.
Mm,
I don't want to have antique furniture as a washstand or something, because I shave with the razor.
Clippings are there.
It's a mess. It's terrible. Yes. Yeah.
Same with the bath. Same with the shower.
I want that as clean and efficient, easy, as simple as possible.
Yes.
I always use a one-piece toilet or wall hung if possible. Everything should
be a water closet. Separate it.
If possible, but
if you can, if you have space for it.
I get it. You don't have to. And of course, much of what we do, we're dealing with pre-built architecture. I
mean, yeah.
If we could build something new, yes, but there's ways of taking existing condominiums or homes and doing as the best you can. But I like to keep it as minimal as possible, easy to clean. I built some huge kitchens for people that never use them. Very elaborate.
But they photograph
carvings.
Really well.
They do, yeah.
For their
friends.
They
never use them.
They never use them.
You know, turn columns on the island and all kinds of things, but it's not practical. Like, it's not practical. You spill spaghetti sauce down the things and you're with a toothbrush getting the...
clean it all up. I know. I was having this discussion about the pot fillers.
Oh, yes.
I was on the fence. I'm like, I don't know if I respect a pot filler.
I didn't know if you were talking about cannabis stores or about the pot fillers.
Oh, pot filler. No, an actual pot over a range.
Yeah. Yes.
And I, my
Pasta
problem,
faucet,
yeah, yeah, my problem is if you have a messy meal being performed or something gets mistaken.
It bubbles over.
Yeah, bubbles all over and it goes all over the pot fill.
Yeah.
Because I was comparing it to Nona.
And again, they have white marble, a lot of them. Like.
Well, here's what we were talking about.
And grout, you can't clean.
Yeah, I know.
With red spaghetti sauce.
So you have to think more clearly about what should be used.
And why do I have a pot filler there when I still have to take the pot of hot water and go dump it in the sink?
Exactly.
Unless you put a drain there. Like, I mean, it looks, a pot filler shows well.
It shows really
it looks
well.
So cool.
In theory, you get to fill your big pot right there without carrying it from the sink. But as you just said, you have to carry it from the stove to the sink.
I got a pot of boiling hot pasta. What do I do with it?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Feeling the weight of the world on your shoulders? You're not alone. Working in the trades can be tough, long hours, physical demands, and the constant pressure can take a toll on your mental and emotional well-being. It's time to invest in you. Steps to Happiness Coaching offers personalized support to help you manage stress and improve work-life balance, build resilience and overcome challenges, enhance your relationships on and off the job site, and find purpose and satisfaction in your work. Life coach Teresa Greco understands the unique pressures of your world. You'll learn practical tools and strategies to unlock your inner joy. Let her help you build a stronger, happier you. So don't let stress hold you back. Schedule a free consultation today. You deserve to be happy because life is too short to be anything but. Check out Steps to Happiness Coaching at TeresaGreco.ca or email Teresa at stepstotruehappiness@gmail.com or connect with her on IG at TeresaGreco_steps to happiness or Facebook Steps to Happiness with Teresa Greco. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Have you had an opportunity to build for a handicapped client?
Many times. So many of my clients, I've watched them get old, and I've learned a lot from that. Mm-hmm. I've had to create ramps where there was none. I've had to create ramps where there was none. I've had to put in chairlifts and stairs, you know, all kinds of things.
You know. Elevators now?
Yeah, yes, it's single elevators as much as possible. Yeah, you know. Depends on, and some people, of course, that can't do that. They have to move.
Sure.
But we try and you know, accommodate the home.
But you can still keep the character of the house.
I've always talked to, when I started with my dad, there were people who at the time I thought were old. You know, some of them were 45 and 50. Like, and when you're 15,
I know.
You know, you're 15, that's old. You think, oh my God, that's they've got old. A foot in the grave. They're about ready to go.
I know.
So, but you see these people get old and you realize, okay, if I'm going to build something for a middle-aged client or a 60-year-old client, I think ahead and I try to include these things like, okay, let's say you can't get up the stairs. You want your grand circular stairs to get... No, we're putting the laundry on the main floor.
Sure.
And we're putting a full bathroom on the main floor, not a powder room.
Yeah.
We're going to make this sensible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't want 6 steps down to the garage. We want, you know, things like that. You try and educate people, but most people think they're never going to die until something happens. But,
this philosophy of thinking, who's going to do this when you're not around, John?
There's far greater minds than mine out there. I'm nothing special. There's great architects out there that think like this, but we just need more of them. I'm not unique. We just need to make sure other people do it, right?
So how do we incubate it? How do we encourage that? What have you seen? You know, how do you encourage people to think differently, to think the way you're thinking, to speak about it?
But am I different? I can't be different.
I think to the masses you're different. I think because you speak your mind no different than we do, and to the masses they think that you're different. And it goes against the grain, right?
Mm.
And I fight it all the time. I've only been in construction a fraction of the time that you've been in construction. And I've been fighting this since day one. Since day one, since I realized, hang on, I could do it this way or I can do it this way.
And your point, and I believe it's my point too, is always think beyond today.
Mm.
So I stuck a chainsaw on my leg about, I think, 8 years ago.
Why'd you do that?
And because I was an imbecile. I was carving a log, carving with it, and at any rate, it just I should have had my chaps on, but they were safe in the workshop. So I'm bedridden, and I'm thinking all kinds of nasty thoughts about how stupid I was, and learned from it. But I realized, this is why we design homes. To accommodate for the accidents of life. I have dear friends who have been skiing for 50 years and they broke their leg last year, the wife did, rather. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't counting on that. And guess what? Their house is all stairs. Come on. And I tell people, like, let's think ahead. They get mad at you half the time. Yeah. They say, well, you know.
They don't want it to turn
I'm
into
not
that.
Crippled. No, you're not crippled now, but something could happen.
But I think the deeper question, you know, is, again, I got to bring this up, and some people don't like it, but it's the end of life conversation. It's like, where do you want to die? If you want to die in your home, then let's start making the provisions
Absolutely.
Now. Let's start making the provisions now.
My God, if you go into public care, you might as well just sign your death
warrant. The majority of people want to die in their home.
You'd be neglected to death.
Right? Everybody wants to die. You know, I look at my parents. They want to die in their home. Great. So when do you want to start making provisions that
exactly.
you can't go up the stairs?
Think ahead.
You can't do whatever. I don't know.
No, you've got to plan ahead for these things.
You just identified it. Everybody thinks it's going to happen to somebody
accidents
else.
Happen. You could drive down the bloody Don Valley Parkway and get sideswiped by somebody. That's not your fault. But you might find yourself, you know, missing a leg or something. Like you.
We don't know.
Every day, I mean, the DVP is the worst thing in the world to get on. It's a death trap every time you're on there. Last week when I went to Toronto, it took me an hour and a half to go 4 miles from Desirondo Road to Marysville Road on the 401 just near Napanee, because there was two distinct accidents. There was a transport flipped on the left on the one side, and 4 miles away was another transport flipped over on the other side, within 4 miles of each other on the westbound lane. And I'm like, what in hell? So my point is, every time you get on the highway or something, yeah, you could have an accident. You could be incapacitated. You just don't know, right? So think in architecture like that.
I've always built, so then it's supposed to be built a lot stronger than what it was supposed to be built, right? You always spend that extra effort. Yeah. And when you discover opportunities, you present those opportunities mm-hmm. thinking, why don't we do this? But then it becomes a budgetary thing.
And people are sometimes stupid because they'll spend $100,000 on appliances and not think of...
Yes. We need the TV, and I need my home automation. Appliances
aren't going to last.
Yes, your appliances
5 years.
will be replaced within a decade,
yeah,
if that.
Yeah, I have issues with Miele appliances. I've yet to see any that last beyond 3 or 4 years without needing a new control panel or something.
They have amazing customer service. Service people coming out and fixing everything all the time.
But they just keep...
I know, that's what
but
I mean.
If you put money into short-term things like that, it's like investing in iPhones repeatedly. Like, we know they're not going to last. You have to
they're designed that way.
They're designed to fail.
We generally miss the almond colored or the olive yeah. green appliances that lasted forever.
The Frigidaires that have been yes. in the garage forever. Yes. Yes, exactly. No, I understand.
They never broke down. They were replaced because they were just aged. They'd no aged software. Out. That's what they did.
And they were heavy as hell to move.
Right? Yeah. So, yes, you just have to think about the future in your architectural design, and people should do it. Now, the condominium people pretty much have it made. It's one level, it's this, it's that, provided the elevators work.
What about children for young families? What are they doing for nurseries? Are they going over the top? Are they creating a safe space for their child?
A lot of them that I deal with are, yes. Yeah. It's a cocoon.
They're creating a space for nurturing that child.
A cocoon.
Yeah.
Sometimes that cocoon is just the parent's taste. It's not the child. But it looks great.
Of course, yeah.
It looks great, you know. But it's not a playroom. I think there should be more of a good playroom.
I agree.
Yeah, and not just a staged, for want of a better term, no offense, Martha, but a Martha Stewart interior that's just, you know. But it looks pretty in magazines, but it's not practical because a child doesn't care if they've got a four-poster bed. Like, really, nope. They just give them the little tykes thing and just make it fun.
Give them a climbing wall. Give them something to do
exactly.
in the room.
And toy space.
Yes, toy space.
Toy space.
Flooring
not,
that
not up. Perfect little baskets. Yes. Everything. Yes. And open baskets with wicker.
That's
you know.
A blog online. That's what
oh,
that is.
Christ.
And,
doesn't
this, and, that, and that's, to me, suppresses creativity.
Yes.
You've got young kids. You know what it's like. They've got playrooms, I presume.
Yeah, they do, actually.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, here's the thing you struggle with sometimes as a parent. The playrooms are a disaster. And you're sitting there going, this is fostering creativity on one aspect, but it challenges the realistic or pragmatic thing and say, like, how do we clean up and organize? And I don't know. Like, you know, this is you have to have the self-awareness in these conversations. Do I not want creative children? Of course I do, because creative children turn into creative adults exactly. that shape the next generations of our future rather than sticking to a script.
Absolutely.
And it's not right nor wrong. It's just
I would go back in a heartbeat to the mess and the clutter of children. Just to see a joyful child's mess is everything. And
it's
I miss
everything.
It. I miss it. And I regret the, you know, I would like to go back and see that mess again, the joyous mess of toys everywhere.
Yes.
And that's what it should be. It shouldn't be a staged interior where...
No. Yes, you know, if you make a mess, sure, clean it up at some point in time.
Of course. Well, there's that, too, but they learn to clean the mess.
Make the mess. No different than creating artwork mm-hmm. on a job site. Guess what? Mm-hmm. It's a disaster when you're creating it.
Yeah.
And every mess gets cleaned up.
Oh, of course.
One of the best things I ever built was a treehouse for a client.
Mm-hmm.
And it was buried inside of a cedar, like next to a cedar. We didn't attach it to the cedar. It was a good 40-year-old cedar. And they gave me free range where I was allowed to build every single wall off angle. Nothing was straight.
Excellent.
It was a Looney Tunes house.
Excellent.
Up high.
Wow.
With a child-friendly staircase, so it was only 4.5 inches tall rise.
So you're saying it's a typical suburban home. every angle off. There was nothing square.
Typical track build.
It was
typical track build. No, but I fit
in with the subdivision.
I had a blast building that, and then I wasn't even done with the build. It still had plexiglass windows to avoid the raccoons from entry. Still had a door latch on it. It still had a wraparound porch on it. It had rope handrails coming down. But on the bottom, it had a tire swing on one side, and it had a sand pit in the middle.
Wow.
But I dug the sand pit 4 feet down.
Yeah.
Because I never wanted the child to ever find the bottom of the sand pit.
Okay. Mm.
I wanted the child to keep on digging and playing in the sand.
You wanted to bury a child alive. You wanted to bury a child alive. You're a statistic.
You the keep child digging, never son. Gonna do that.
There's a quarter down there. Yeah.
I can keep on going. I'm stuck.
There's a lollipop on the bottom of that.
But that's one client. I've never had another client ever ask me to do anything similar. The kids are grown up now.
It's joyous.
It's completely.
Completely. Yeah, and you're happy you did it.
I was loving it. I had a blast building it.
Well, I think Home Depot sells 89 degree squares anyways, so you can get that's typical.
I think all their sheds are in the same shape.
We're taking the play away from children is what we're doing.
Yeah,
exactly. Right?
We're structuring them. You must do
But their
this.
Bedroom. What do we give them for a bedroom? What do we build for a bedroom?
It's a square box.
It's a box.
It's a square box.
That's what I mean. There's nothing in there.
But I always encourage my kids, and they will see this, and they won't argue with me, I think. And put your own personality in that room.
Yeah. You know?
I intentionally built mine loft beds so that they would have a space underneath to do what they wanted with. And then the stairs, I actually made the stairs, which were drawers. So the stairs were a cabinet, and the drawers slid out, and they put their things in there, and they climbed up to the top, and it took a normal room and just gave it a loft height. And it's magical for them at that age. And I think it's important to have that at any rate. Let them have creativity, not just a staged room. And yes, learning to play is everything, and also learning to clean up. You can make that mess, you got to clean it up. Yeah.
Of course. Right. Reward, consequence, reward. Absolutely. Like whatever.
But I have to ask you because you mentioned last week you're on some barn rebuild or something.
And yeah, we're doing a barn. Yeah,
like rebuilding it or?
Well, it's an old barn that was a metal barn, just a typical
metal
barn.
Frame wall or?
Yeah, we're doing timber. No, we're doing post and beam.
Wow. Okay.
So it's interesting because we're actually working with timber kits, and at first when they started the business with the dad, they started hand cutting. 25 plus years ago, but they recently bought a Italian machine that does all of the Morris tenants for them.
Damn.
I mean, he's done it this way because it speeds things up. And
of course,
here's the ironic thing. I go visit, he's in Lindsay. I go visit him the day of, and I'm like, why is the shop so quiet? There's like nobody here. It was, well, one guy is sick. One guy I suspect is sick. He's probably deer hunting. He's deer hunting. And the other guy's moose hunting.
Yeah.
So he was like, to tell you the truth, I've got this machine now, though I don't have to rely because they don't rely on me anymore.
That's right.
So he's packaging these things, and then he's pre-staining everything beforehand. Mm. And we're going to be assembling it, and then we're just discussing how the cladding is going to be right now. It's a good sized barn, 72 by 34.
There's automation, though, you see.
It's a lot of automation, people. But it's the only way that he can do this and get it done in 5 weeks and
because
then
install. Because he can't rely on people?
Part of it.
There's a lot of that in this day and age.
I know. It was part of it. He didn't mind the fact that they were pretending to be sick that day.
Yeah, that's not right. No, I've had a few of those occasions in my life, but I weeded those people out. Because I've got to be there, and I lead by examples, as I'm sure you do too. You have to, you got to be there. When everybody else calls in sick, who's there?
That's
the boss.
Yeah, the boss and the wife and the family, and they're still doing drawings and they're still packaging kits and getting it all ready. But people don't care about your business. I've always said that if you shouldn't keep an employee that doesn't care about your business.
Exactly.
If they don't care about the business as much as you, then
don't have them around.
No.
Better to be smaller than to rely on somebody that isn't there. Yeah. At one time, I had 29 men working under me, and I just, it was a headache.
Because 29 efficient? Was it practical?
Very efficient, but if you lost one, and they were good people, they weren't bad, but if you lost one to genuine sickness or something, you were down that man, and you needed him. So that was
And it would affect the whole business.
It does. So everything was based on 29 people showing up, and you only had 28 that day. It just put too much pressure.
Safety Corner, your weekly guide to safer construction. Introducing Safety Corner, the latest must-watch show from the creators of The Construction Life. Co-hosted by safety expert Philip Farrar and powered by his S1 Safety Division, this 30-minute weekly series cuts through the noise to bring you real footage and raw insights from actual job sites. No fluff, just hard-hitting analysis, and Philip and myself break down what went right, what went wrong, and what could have gone catastrophically wrong. Each week, we tackle the biggest safety issues facing the industry today, sharing the knowledge every tradesperson needs to make it home safe. Whether you're on the job or managing the site, Safety Corner is here to help you build smarter, safer, and better. Tune in to revolutionize the way you approach safety on the job. Catch Safety Corner weekly, because safety isn't just important, it's essential.
So it goes back to the younger trade. It goes back to the younger trade where they're always questioning, we need to expand, we need to grow, but I cannot find the workforce to help me grow.
Yeah. Well, that was 15 years ago, and half of them are dead now. Half of them are dead, seriously, because they were older. I mean, they're gone. I can't replace them. They don't have that John, mentality.
Are we going to have old tradespeople?
Yes.
Like 30 years from now?
Yes, I think so.
This young generation right now, a 30-year-old right now.
Well, I think they won't have a choice because they don't know how to do anything else, so they'll have to keep doing it.
So they will be that old tradesperson?
I think so, because what else are they going to do? If that's all you know, I mean, can they go and work in a big box store? I don't know. How many retail jobs are there?
They could be a social media influencer for
construction. Yeah, but there's a lot of those too.
Right.
So you never know. No, I think as you're more in tune with it than I am, really, because I live in a very small corner of my world, and I can't really understand what the rest of the world is doing, but you speak to everybody and have a very broad spectrum of input. And don't you think, though, that there's a declining trade ability?
Yeah.
There's not enough people in the trades?
Yes.
So, therefore, I think there's going to be older tradespeople because they'll be in demand, I think. That's my conjecture. I'm
a yes and no on that. I think that a lot of them are going to leave before they become old.
And do what?
They will find something else.
Okay.
I don't know. Like we talked earlier on the other show, we talked about how the economy in Canada is not friendly enough to survive here. You got a lot of people deciding to leave.
No.
People are, and on the write-up here, I was telling them about somebody that I found out recently that has made the decision to sell off their property, move into a condo, rent it out, looking at selling off their vehicle, selling off tools. So they're already making the move. They've made the decision. So they're not staying in Canada. They're leaving.
Funny you should mention that. There's a damn good carpenter in Toronto that moved from Turkey here, and he's moving back to Turkey because he can't make it in Toronto.
Turkey's very corrupt too. Huh?
Yeah. But he's a brilliant carpenter, brilliant renovator, but he's just fed up with, he was very, very busy.
He's fed up with what? The clients, the craft,
the trade? The Toronto itself.
Just the city.
You cannot get anything done. It costs a fortune. You're either undercut. He's either building, bidding a legitimate $300,000 job, and somebody's bid $900,000, or somebody's bid $150,000 against him. So how? But he knows it's $300,000. But that's the extremes. So it's difficult to work with that. He says, "I'm fed up with it," because you lose it to the guy that's going to do it for $150,000, who completely wrecks the job, and then it goes on and on. So he's leaving. He's leaving this country, and he's capable, and I'm sad to see him go.
But see, this shapes everything about construction, right? Because now you're losing craftsmen. Right. So what are you going to end up? You're going to end up with the out of the box.
You're going to end up with home automation.
Home automation.
You're going to get an automation. That's
you're
all.
Gonna you're going to get a. Everybody's going to get a blue
prefabs.
Right? Yeah, prefabs. Yeah. Everybody's going to get the same
modular
structure.
Prefabs, which is not the solution.
No,
I don't. We're
seeing
it.
We're already seeing it.
They're shells. I mean, they're
coming out of a factory already made.
They're
put
prison
together.
Boxes. Like, it's just
jail cells.
Yeah, they're just. They don't have the soul.
No personality.
You're stripping human beings of.
You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Hey, World Economic Forum crap.
We've heard it so many times.
And you won't be able to think for yourself because somebody else is going to think for you. Here's what you're going to live in.
Well, we want to beat independent thought out of them, that's the thing. Yeah.
What did you think of Elon's presentation with the the robot and the taxi cabs. And did you see all that?
No, I didn't. No.
Oh, you didn't see that?
No, I didn't. I'm really...
He had robots serving drinks.
I've been very
drinks.
Busy the last as well.
He had robots serving.
That terrifies me.
He had taxi structures, vans that were all fully automated. He had taxis that were no steering wheel.
I saw China's latest humanoid robots, which is scarily...
Scary,
yeah.
Very feminine.
The latex faces that look...
Very feminine.
Very scary. It's too much too soon. Our technological ability has outpaced our moral compass.
Mm.
And it's just...
Do you think your craft will be replicated by a machine one day, and it's just...
Well, it already is in CNC up to a point, you know.
Duplicated, and that's what people are going to be purchasing.
Yeah, and it's dirt cheap, you know. They turn out a relief carving in a half an hour or an hour that would take me a week to do. And it's not quite the same because it doesn't get the human touch.
It's not the same.
But it, stand back 10 feet, it looks great.
Sure.
Or it's just precast injection mold. Look at all the styrofoam moldings, you know what I mean? Exterior columns, Corinthian capitals that are just, you know, injection molded. God, like, you're just putting components together.
I only knew of one guy that was doing actual plaster moldings, and I got him to bid, and his price was the same as the styrofoam moldings. And I asked him, how are you coming in at the same price?
Wow.
And he says, I have to stay competitive. He were plaster moldings.
Mm-hmm.
Solid plaster moldings.
I'm reproducing some in York and Toronto, in the old Toronto, like York, what they used to call York.
Yeah.
King Street up
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I have to reproduce some, but I'm taking a cast of it, and then I'm, you know, old-fashioned.
Who do you work with on doing the replicate?
Oh, I do it personally.
You do it yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because it's fun. Take a latex.
I'm fascinated by that. You're doing the whole old.
Well, like, again, I watched the old boys back in the day where I used to have to.
The burlap and everything?
The whole night. Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Exactly.
I absolutely love that.
How my dad and the boys used to make their homes, they always did plaster. Well, first of all, a dome. We did domes in the bungalow, so that's easy to do. But the plaster molding, and I just instructed somebody last week on that. To make a plaster cove, we just used to drive 4-inch spikes on the angle. To give a just in an outside corner on the ceiling,
yeah,
and that gives you the fingers to hold the plaster, and then just a plywood mold and go around with your brown coat and then make a little bit larger mold.
Yep.
And then your
what is it, three molds, right? Is it three molds?
Usually three. You can get away with two
with a sometimes. Slight variance on the
exactly
cut.
And just go around it around, and it's held in place. It's the way it's been done for
and
centuries.
Never cracks, never splits, never
nope. Provided your structure's good.
That's the other thing.
And I said to him, that's what you got to check, because when you've got floor joists that don't quite meet and they're moving from
TGIs,
then everything's
LVLs,
going to be a problem. So that's going to crack anything. So secure your structure first. So
I love all those details. Yeah. We don't see them in homes anymore.
No.
But we're now seeing rabbited half-inch baseboard reveals with LED lights in them. With flat.
Fascinating stuff, you know. Fascinating stuff. But I'd get tired of it now.
Fascinating to the point that I want to grab the vacuum and just do a little bit of vacuuming. And I want to just purposely hit them and just show them why this doesn't work.
Yeah, they get to be too sterile and too, I don't know, just clinical almost. It's like a laboratory or something. I don't know.
But the latest with the minimalist.
That's minimalist. Easy for you to say.
Is the doors now going to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
No top jam. No top trim. No top anything. And I don't get this.
It's...
I don't get it.
It's, yeah. There's a time and a place for it, but not, have you
seen?
Throughout.
No, I haven't seen this. So the door goes right up to the ceiling?
So the ceiling just goes right
continues
through.
Continues right
the
through.
The door just goes up, yeah.
So there's no header on your ceiling anymore?
It's just a long door.
Just a tall, tall door.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit much. Yeah.
So it's got to be, it's obviously not a solid door, it could be too heavy.
I would say like one of those as a dramatic feature somewhere, but not throughout the whole house.
Every single door?
No. Then you lose the effect.
I think they're solid, but they're not solid wood. They're probably cord, right?
Yeah.
Just to give them some weight to them.
Oh, they'd have to have the weight to them.
Yeah, to make them move, right?
Wow.
I mean, one of the things that I do like about that whole kind of technique are the sausages. hiding some of the hinges. Yes, some of them. Because now you're seeing more of the wood, right? Yeah. You're appreciating the wood and the door itself.
That's old European technology. I know it is. Too. Very old European technology.
But now everyone's discovering and thinking, oh, this just came out. This just didn't come out.
Yeah.
We go back to how you've mentioned several times. Look back in history.
Yeah.
I think people just need to travel and take a lot more pictures.
So. I was just thinking that. Just explore history.
Just explore.
Study. With me, I just studied in books forever and ever. That's my. I haven't traveled the world. But
you see something that you like. This is cool.
I've studied the world in books and architecture and studied. And, had to argue with people. I'm sure like anybody in the trades, we all contribute some knowledge, so we sometimes have to even educate our fellow architects or engineers to say this does exist because we did that and I remember when so and so did that and this is what they did and
now there's a different conversation too. Now you're challenging somebody else's ego. No, this does exist.
So my dad, prime example, my dad and I was a young man then, early 80s was the King Eddie Hotel restoration, and he
was brought in with his friend,
was Doug McIntyre, was one of the architects.
With the tower on top, was it? No.
King Eddie Hotel.
With the tower on top.
Well, when it used to be.
Yeah.
In those days, it was very grimy and black. And
when did they build the condo tower?
Oh, God, that wasn't until after.
That would have been that would have been in 2010 or something.
Yeah, I'm talking 1980, maybe 81 or something.
Yeah.
So, technology, this is fascinating. Technology, old technology. We toured in there. Post-war, the interior had been clad over with slabs of marble to make it look modern. It was post-war. You know the King Eddie? It was the first electrified hotel in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful Georgian interior, lots of plaster moldings, Corinthian columns. Majestic, a classic King Edward Edwardian times, very masculine hotel in the interior. Post-war, they had modernized it, covered over everything. By removing the panels, we had discovered, and I thanked some ghost architect for preserving that. He just covered over everything. He didn't demolish.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry about
that. No, that's fine.
An old bellhop was brought forward, very elderly, frail man. And he said, I'm going to take you into the kitchens in the basement. I said, no, the kitchens are on the second floor. He said, no, they're in the basement. So we go to the basement, and there's a bricked-in arch. And he said, break down that arch. Sure enough, there's beehives of ovens. That's where they used to cook, in the basement.
Hmm.
And he said, these were designed, they're actually under the front entrance, so that the heat from the ovens would allow for red carpet year-round on the street. The street was fucking heated, heated.
Really? Mm.
And right there is where they used to dump the coal down here, and they were coal-fired ovens, brick, and that heated the front entrance, red carpet year-round. There was no Royal York then, right? That was the hotel in Toronto.
Wow.
He takes us up to the third floor, the ballroom. It was all white, very elaborate plaster ornamentation with the arches were covered in plaster floral motifs. And he said, this is the pink room. This is designed for ladies' complexions. He said, those rosebuds up there are pink light bulbs. And we're looking at it. We thought he's demented. We see there's nothing but white plaster ornament. My dad grabs a scaffold and a stick and he taps the center of a rosebud. It's shattered pink glass. They had spray painted over all this. It was a pink light bulb to help with ladies' complexions in this massive, beautiful, well-lit room.
And someone just painted all over it.
We lost all that in the 50s, post-war, as they say, they had covered everything, slabs of marble, very clean and sleek and modern and all that sort of thing. Technology. Who thought of putting the bloody ovens under the front door so that there would no snow year-round?
So smart.
And then sometime in the 50s it was changed. And of course people are dead. They forget about it. It just becomes part of it. So we're doing the forensics going backwards and all this. It all went the way of the Concorde. We were at the apex of supersonic flying and air travel. And then we've
got rid of it.
We've declined.
Mm.
So there's technology, just to touch on your subject about going back again to...
But again, going back to history, right? That You don't know what you don't know until you
no,
do.
No, and it's and that's within the memory of people still living. But so I was blessed to see that kind of thing, and it humbles you again. You realize you don't know everything. You there's people smarter than you, and you learn from them.
So why aren't they taking any of this, these ideas into the new towers that are being built all over Toronto? Because we've seen the cranes. There's so many cranes out.
And the crane collapse.
Yeah, we saw that one recently.
My God, you showed that yesterday.
Yeah, fortunately, no fatality. Death.
How does that happen? With all the permits, all the engineering, all the sign-offs, how does the crane collapse?
Philip is looking into it. We're going to do a show about it. Because that's scary. We haven't had one, I think,
it
2 years.
It could have been a potential
It could have been that, really. It was kind of lucky that it landed on the lower level there, not on the street area.
It just buckled completely.
So you got to wonder, how did that happen? What happened?
Yeah, there's so many sign-offs. One of my marina neighbors over here he's a lawyer that has to sign off everything for these cranes. He gets the liability at the end. Like he has to, for one of the firms in Toronto, and he keeps his boat down here at the adjacent marina. And he said the hell he's got to go through. Like, he has to verify every, not just one engineer, sometimes two. Like, then the liability end
everything.
Of it. Everything. Wow. It gets to him at the last stage as a lawyer because it becomes the liability. Like, to make sure that, okay, this engineer's got insurance and you've got insurance and the building inspector or whatever has signed off. It's got to be signed off 10 ways to Sunday before that thing is built. So how does it collapse? Did one guy forget to tighten the bolt? What is it, you know?
We're going to look into it. I want to find out.
Yeah, it's just shocking, isn't it, when you think of it?
Makes you think. Things that make you go,
But you have all this opportunity with all these new towers going up, these new structures going up. They spend a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort on marketing and trying to entice people to move into these structures.
And a lot of cranes, there's a shortage of cranes.
And we don't use any of this old technology on this new construction.
No, we don't.
When we could be. No, we're more concerned about green building.
Yeah. Yeah. Leeds. Leeds building. Yes, I'm working in
Leeds
one.
Is full of shit.
Do you think
Leeds
people,
working sorry, in one in Ottawa. But,
well, do you think people who are not as fascinated with construction as the folks sitting here and listening in care?
What do you mean?
Well, like, you know, I'm fascinated to hear that there's a kitchen underground that actually heated the underside. Like,
there was.
Right?
Was,
ingenious, yeah. Right?
Do you think it was deemed unsafe.
Do you think mainstream actually give a damn? You think they care?
I think they would if they knew.
You think so?
I think they knew sure. They would. I think so.
Okay, well, they appreciate it enough to say, like, you know, look at the design, the thought, the collaboration, the architecture, just the engineering that went in behind that.
The thing is, I don't know who else knows about that beyond me and a handful of people. I mean, my father's dead, and the architect Doug, he's dead. And like, who else?
But
I'm telling you guys.
That's one building. One building.
Just
right.
One.
Right.
Exactly.
So I can only assume other buildings. I can only imagine. You know.
Yeah, but so many were raised.
Royal York. I mean,
Nathan Phillips destroyed so much of downtown Toronto. He hated the old buildings. He just destroyed it. He hated them. He wanted a new modern age. So he raised to the ground so many of those beautiful buildings. So, but yes, how many do exist? Even where the Royal York stands now, I mean, there was that whole block was demolished too. That was the Queen's Hotel or something, I believe, prior to that. Which was a beautiful structure unto itself, but it wasn't 27 stories of majesty. But either way. And even the Royal York is basically a skyscraper. It's steel girders and limestone veneer.
The Hockey Hall of Fame building.
Yeah, it's stunning. Oh, boy.
I'm just wondering what is in that basement.
Yeah, we'd have to know. And what's the other, the Port Authority building down, this restaurant there now? What's they call that?
Thing? Oh, Harbor.
Harbor, yeah, exactly.
That's another one.
That's a gorgeous building.
I love that building.
I would love to crawl around in there. Oh, boy.
You can only imagine what the basements are like in there.
I could spend forever just in forensics.
Speaking of which, Luca Bacci owes me a dinner for over there.
Who's that?
He was a former OHBA CEO.
What's OHB?
Ontario Housing Building Association.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know all that.
I made a wager with him on a show when the government announced they're going to build 1.5 million homes in 10 years. That's exactly how I reacted, John. That's exactly how I reacted.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, it's pretty ambitious, man. Yeah, I said, you haven't even
it's hit impossible.
The letter. You haven't hit the letter A on that word.
No, it's impossible.
And then I said, based on the 10 years previous, you haven't even hit half of that mark.
No, not at all.
And we're going into a decline. He goes, what are you talking about? We're going to decline. We're doing well. Luca. As soon as he resigned, I text him. I'd like to have my dinner now, please.
Yeah, good for you.
I'd never heard back from him, though.
No. 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 Gentlemen, I need a drink.